Today on Maine Calling, an update on the new COVID vaccine, flu season, and other public health matters. You've likely heard that the newest version of the COVID vaccine is available, but is it a good idea to get it now or wait? What's different about this version? And is it a good idea to get a flu shot and COVID vaccine at the same time? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, public health experts join us to answer those questions and more. We'll learn about a new free app you can download to keep track of your immunizations, what wastewater testing is telling us about Maine's COVID status, and we'll discuss some of those scary diseases spread by mosquitoes, such as Eastern equine encephalitis. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working this summer to purchase and protect the historic Morris Farm in Wiscasset. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org. By Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The new COVID vaccine is now available. We are going to learn about that and the current COVID surge, and we're going to find out about other threats to public health. Joining us for a little while today, Dr. Pateri Vaugh, who is director of Maine's Center for Disease Control and Prevention. And for the entire hour, we'll have Dr. Dora Mills, Chief Health Improvement Officer for Maine Health, and Dr. James Jarvis, Physician Leader and Director of Clinical Education for Northern Light Health. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. Thank you, all of you, for joining us today. And there's so many questions. Dr. Vaugh, can you hear me?
Hi, Jen. Thank you for having me on. Do you hear me okay?
I can. Let's talk first about this recent surge in COVID cases that we're hearing about. It. I know a lot of people act nonchalant about COVID, but people are coming down with it. How prevalent is COVID in Maine right now? What is especially that wastewater testing revealing?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely, I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm glad folks are curious about what's going on. In terms of COVID activity, we are indeed seeing an uptick in cases by way of wastewater activity and also what we're hearing on the ground. But as you said, you know, I think with COVID right now, what we understand at this point is that we are able to understand the patterns much better. We're able to predict the patterns of COVID at this point. There's a regular ebb and flow of it, and there's always going to be some level of baseline activity. In addition to that, with the increase in activity, all those things that we know are indeed working. We don't see the same level of hospitalizations or deaths related to COVID at this time. What we still encourage, though, is that folks get vaccinated, because the new vaccines are indeed out now. In addition to that, if they are developing symptoms that are similar to like flu-like symptoms or COVID-like symptoms, go ahead and get tested because there is treatment available as well. And we would still recommend those same precautions. You know, if you're feeling sick, stay home. If you're feeling sick and it's not going away, please reach out to your doctor, try to get tested, and try to get treatment for it.
Dr. Vaugh, I know some people who have already received the new COVID vaccine, the brand new one, so I know it's available in Maine. How widely available is it? Where can somebody get it?
You know, for example, one of the things I did was I checked out CVS. CVS has you can go online, you can see whether or not there are availabilities near you, and then you can schedule a vaccine, and you can pair it up with your flu vaccine, too.
That was going to be one of my questions. I want to talk about your new app. The Maine CDC recently launched a new free app where people can keep track of their immunizations. It's called Docket. I tried it yesterday. It worked. So tell us what the thinking was. Why did you launch the app?
Oh, I'm so glad that it worked. That's a relief to hear that. You know, this app, the reason for this is we were trying to make it easier for people. And we know that the digital landscape has changed, right? And I don't know if there are parents out there or folks out there where it's always been difficult to keep track of all your records and all the records of your kids or if you're a caretaker. So this app is intended to, using the technology available to us, make it easy to access those records. And so the way it works is that your immunization records here in Maine automatically go into our immunization information system. And that gets connected to Docket. So you can check out all of your immunizations when you need it. And you can do that for your kids, too, if they're less than 18 years of age.
And I understand that the Maine CDC has been seeing a surge in requests in the past couple of years.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So this is like one place you can just access. You can carry it with you on your phone, and you can show it to whoever you need to show it to.
So one more question about the Docket app. I noticed that on my own, although I was up to date on my COVID vaccinations, it said that I needed to get some other immunizations. And I'm wondering if that's because I really do need them, or is it because the app may not be able to access some of my old childhood immunizations? And whatever the answer is, I'm wondering if this is worth a conversation with my doctor.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so glad you asked that question. So essentially, this is through our State Immunization Information Systems Impact. In order for it to be captured there, it has to be sent there. So if an immunization was done in the last several years, then it automatically goes there from the provider to Maine CDC. Now, if you don't see a vaccine there, but you're sure you must have had it done, or you're just uncertain, please go ahead and talk to your doctor, because there's a few reasons why you might not see it there. If you are older, if you have older childhood vaccines, it may not be automatically uploaded into Impact. If that's the case, Docket will not see it. So what you can do is bring those records to your provider or ask your provider for those records, and they can send it directly to our main CDC team, and they will upload it into Impact, and you will see it on Docket. Same thing applies for folks that are from out of town. If you have a provider that was out of town and you need to transfer your records, you can transfer provider, out-of-town provider can transfer that directly to Maine CDC, or you can transfer it to your provider here in Maine, and they can send it directly to Maine CDC as well.
Dr. Vall, we heard just this morning about a case of triple E in a horse in Maine. Can you talk about how concerning this is to you, and then also some other diseases that you're keeping an eye on?
Yeah, no, this is something that is concerning for our in our public health world. But we're, triple E, Eastern Equine Encephalitis, is carried by, for humans, the way we get infected is through mosquito bites. And, these mosquito-borne diseases such as triple E, what we're seeing across the region, actually, it's not just in Maine, is that we're seeing activities earlier and we're seeing it go longer because it's just warmer and the environment is just perfect for mosquito breeding and the mosquito population. It worries me for that reason, right, that we're seeing it earlier and we're seeing it longer. But at the same time, there are things that we can do to prevent this. The first thing is making sure that you try to avoid those hours between dusk and dawn. If you are outside, I do highly encourage folks and their family members and kids to wear long sleeves. There is also mosquito repellent that you can use. In addition to that, the other thing I want to focus on too is, there are things that you can do about the population, the mosquito population themselves, trying to eliminate environments where they can populate. What that means is if you see standing water, it can be the size of a teaspoon even. If you see standing water, make sure you get rid of it around the home. And so there's two things you can do. There's things that you can do for yourself in terms of like wearing long sleeves, wearing mosquito repellent, making sure you avoid, if possible, the hours of dusk and dawn, including activities during those times. And then trying to control the population itself, mosquito population itself, by eliminating standing water around the home.
And Dr. Vaugh, I'm looking at a news release from your office, and it talks about other diseases as well, something called Jamestown Canyon virus and West Nile virus. Again, no humans, correct, have contracted these in Maine, but they have in other states.
That's correct. And that's why regionally we are concerned as a collective public health group. You're right. And these are all what we call those arboviruses, vector-borne viruses. It's because they're, you know, carried by mosquito populations that we have some degree of control over. But you're right. Here in Maine, we have not identified a human case that have picked up the illness here in Maine. We do have a human case, but it was an out-of-state case.
Dr. Vaugh, thank
you. Specific to West Nile virus.
Yeah, I really appreciate you calling in. I understand that you're traveling this week, but I especially appreciate you calling into Maine Calling and joining our conversation today. That's Dr. Puteri Vaugh, who is the head of the Maine CDC. Before we talk about COVID some more, Dr. Mills, let's keep talking just for a moment about Triple E, or Eastern Equine Encephalitis. Anybody who's reading the national papers knows that this is a pretty big concern in some other states. How do you view it?
Yes, you know, we've having tracked these diseases, these arboviruses, as they're called. These are viruses that are transmitted by mosquitoes, primarily, and we see surges of them about every 3 to 5 years in New England. So Triple E, West Nile virus, the Jamestown Canyon virus, for instance. So over the years, they tend to wax and wane. And this seems to be one of those years where it's really increased quite a bit. What's notable is that these mosquito-borne viruses in Maine we see them more later in the season. So generally speaking, and they tend to amplify in birds and mosquitoes as the season progresses. So in the past, we used to see the first virus detected in a bird or mosquito, or occasionally a human, usually not until late August, occasionally earlier. Well, this year in Maine, the first case of arbovirus was West Nile virus, at least, was detected in late June. The Jamestown Canyon virus was actually detected even earlier in June. So that's given that they amplify in mosquitoes during the season, and that we found that the state detected this earlier in the season than ever before, is concerning, because this, now we don't see as many mosquitoes out there. It's a bit cooler. But when you do see mosquitoes, they have a much higher chance of having one of these viruses. So as Dr. Vaugh mentioned, though we can still enjoy Maine, enjoy the outdoors, it's just a matter of taking some precautions that, frankly, in other parts of the country and the world, they do routinely. In fact, just a little trivia question, it's not so trivial, but if you're sitting around a table this weekend and you could ask your friends and family, what's the deadliest animal on the planet? And as they go on about maybe whether it's a tiger or lions or bears or dogs, it's actually the mosquito. So mosquitoes across the world transmit a lot of diseases, such as particularly malaria as being the deadliest one that we around the world. So this is something that these are precautions that we take routinely when we go and when we live in other parts of the country and world, including in the South. We're just not used to taking these precautions here in New England, and we have to get used to it. They have to be kind of part of our everyday repertoire. So I've got DEET, 40% DEET in a pump spray in multiple places by the door, in my car. I just routinely spray it on when I'm outside, especially dusk and dawn, and get rid of standing water, as Dr. Vaugh mentioned, making sure my screens are fixed, because sometimes they get into the screens. So it's just one of those things we have to get used to, just like most of the rest of the world and the country has.
And Dr. Jarvis, I'm going to follow up with an email from Myron, because it's related to this. Myron writes, our pregnant daughter-in-law will be visiting from Colorado next week. Are there any specific precautions we should advise her to take to avoid Triple E and other mosquito-borne diseases?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And the answer is all of those things that you heard both Dr. Vaugh and Dr. Mills talk about. Pregnant women can be more susceptible to some of these particular mosquito-borne diseases. You can remember that a few years ago, we talked about the Zika virus down in the southern part of the country. Thankfully, we haven't had that as a concern this year. And particularly here in New England. But that was one that particularly was causing some major problems, including miscarriages in women who were pregnant. But the same precautions that we talked about then are the same ones we do now. Exactly what Dora and Terry were talking about. You know, making sure that dawn to dusk, that you are either indoors or well protected if you're going to be outdoors, and that's really important for women who are pregnant.
All right, I want to talk about COVID and the vaccines a little bit more. Let me just ask each of you what your hospital systems are seeing. Do you have patients, Dr. Jarvis, that are hospitalized with COVID today?
Yes, we do have patients who are hospitalized with COVID. Not all of them are hospitalized because of COVID. Some of them, it's just an incidental. They came into the hospital for another reason and had symptoms, so were tested. But it is a concern for us. It is what we're really seeing is on the outpatient or ambulatory side that we're seeing a large number of people calling in with symptoms suggestive of COVID. We recommend that they test. And then particularly those that are immunocompromised or older strongly recommend that they get treatment for COVID, particularly with Paxlovid. Very easy to prescribe that and get it in a very quick fashion because that has been shown to decrease symptoms, but more importantly, to decrease serious illness and death. And so that's the reason why, especially those people who are over the age of 50 or if they have any underlying condition that would make them immunocompromised, really important to call out to your provider, particularly if you test positive. We know it's hard right now for some people getting tests. They are readily available, but at a cost at most pharmacies and supermarkets. But it's really important to have some of those at home so that when you do get those symptoms or you've been exposed, that you can test because, again, we have specific treatments for COVID-19.
And Dr. Mills, what about in the Maine health system? How many cases of COVID are you seeing and are they serious?
Yes, we are seeing statewide about 35 to 45 hospitalized on any given day with COVID. And as Jim mentioned, sometimes it's due to COVID, sometimes it's incidental. I see the statewide, we've got about five most days in the ICU. And we have about one every week who dies in Maine due to COVID. So it's still a very impactful disease. And, you know, these are, I'm citing data, but these are real, you know, people with family members and, you know, and loved ones who are very worried about them. And that's on one hand. On the other hand, 35 to 45 hospitalized is way down from the 440 we had hospitalized in January of 2022 statewide. So much better. We have a lot more immunity due to the vaccine and more people, you know, people getting the infection as well. But, you know, although the wastewater levels, you know, have stabilized a little bit, but with school back in session and cooler weather, it, you know, our rates may go up a bit too. So I agree with Jim. The best thing we could do right now is to get vaccinated. I just got mine on Monday. I went to the different chain pharmacies. The chain pharmacies are getting the vaccine first. So Hannaford, CVS, Walgreens, and the like, Rite Aid. So they tend to get it first. At Maine Health, we're getting it, but it is trickling in. So, and I know other practices I've heard of as well at Northern Light Health and other places that we're just starting to get the vaccine in, but it does generally go to the chain pharmacies first. And that's where I got mine on Tuesday. So, you know, just and if you're in, the rates are high enough that if you are immunocompromised or an older adult, if you're going to be in an indoor, you know, crowded place, you might consider wearing a mask and taking other precautions. And certainly, you know, asking people to stay home around you if they're sick, and washing your hands very often. So, and testing, getting test kits, as Jim mentioned. They also, I understand the federal government's going to be offering free test kits again by the, around the end of September, that you can mail order. So that's good. So it's, we have it, we know that we have upticks of COVID when there are new variants, which seems to be the case from the summer. And then also during the winter when people are indoors a lot more. So I suspect it's going to be around for a bit and it may increase over the next several months as well.
All right. Well, we are talking about public health, specifically the new COVID vaccine, the surge in COVID, and mosquito-borne illnesses. What are your questions? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. What do you want to know about the new COVID vaccine or other public health issues? With me, Dr. Jim Jarvis with Northern Light Health and Dr. Dora Mills with Maine Health. Share your comments and questions with a quick email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We have an email here from Jean, and Jim, I'll go to you with this. Jean writes, I am in my mid-70s. I have an appointment to get my new COVID booster this afternoon, and I will schedule my annual flu vaccination in a couple of weeks. Last fall, I also had an RSV vaccination. Is RSV also a vaccine I should be getting annually? Okay, so Jean is asking this question, I suspect, for a lot of people. And there are lots of layers we can add to it. She's getting her COVID vaccine. She's thinking about her flu shot. She's thinking about RSV. Can you get them all at once?
Yeah, so that's a great, and Jean, that's wonderful that you're able to get your COVID vaccine. It's funny, I actually just got asked this question in the hallway of the hospital just yesterday. Someone stopped me and said, I had my RSV vaccine last year. What do I need to do this year? So let's first talk about influenza. Influenza is extremely important that everybody over the age of 6 months gets that this year. If you remember, last year we had a resurgence of influenza here in Maine, much greater that because all the precautions we took in order to prevent spread of COVID during the pandemic got let down. We didn't have the 6-foot rule. We weren't wearing masks. We were all congregating together. We saw a resurgence of influenza. We don't want to see that again this year. So flu shot, everybody over age 6 months should get their flu shot. Similarly, if you have not had a recent COVID, and really they're talking about if you haven't had it in 2 months, then you should get a COVID shot this fall as well. And particularly because these are new formulations and they cover the current family of variants that are circulating now. As far as RSV goes, that's recommended for individuals who are over age 70. And for individuals over age 60 to have a discussion with their doctor to determine whether it's right for them to get it. The good news about the RSV vaccine is right now we know that it is good for 3 years. So if you got it last year, you don't need to get it again this year. Our hope is that it'll be a one and done vaccine because RSV doesn't mutate as much as we see with influenza and COVID. And so that's good news. And we may, as time goes on, be able to say, hey, listen, if you got your RSV vaccine, you're probably good for a longer period of time, maybe for the rest of your life. If you have not gotten your RSV vaccine and you are in those categories, so over the age of 70 or over the age of 60, you should have those discussions with your provider because we think it's really important. RSV, which typically only causes cold symptoms in most people, can be very serious in young children, particularly newborns, and definitely in the elderly. So people die from RSV and we want to help prevent that. As focusing on newborns, it's also important that if you're a woman who's pregnant and is going to deliver during the RSV season, we recommend the vaccine for them as well. And if they do not get it, there is actually a treatment for children, for newborns, to prevent them from getting RSV. It's a monoclonal antibody, but you'll hear people talk about it as a vaccine. The reason why we use that terminology is because that helps us to get it paid for under the Children's Vaccine Program. And so that's good news for parents.
All right. An email from Joanne.
I put it all in that little nutshell and got it all.
It really reflects a lot of questions people are having here. And this one does as well. An email from Joanne. I had a serious anaphylactic reaction to the J&J vaccine in 2021. Let's see here. The email just popped away from me. Let me see if I can find that. Oh, no, there it is. No COVID vaccines taken since. Cannot take MMR-based vaccines. Recommended to take the Novavax, completely different formulation. Maine Health PCP practice would not provide Novavax last year when first approved unless 5 patients requested it due to the cost of a Novavax vial. No single one dose pre-fills offered. Any availability about available locations?
Great question. And yes, so there are 3 updated COVID vaccines that are available this fall or becoming available. So they're the 2 mRNA vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna. And then there's the Novavax vaccine, which is a bit more traditional vaccine using a protein with an adjuvant. So the if you want that one, and a lot of people do, they don't want another mRNA vaccine for whatever reason, had side effects from it or whatever. It is a little bit harder to find. It is not available yet, as I understand it, but I do also understand that they are providing it in single dose vaccine vials this year. The caller's right, the emailer is correct, that last year it was in 5 doses and it was quite expensive and it doesn't last that long once you open up the vial. So it was even harder to get. So I think Novavax has responded, and I do understand, at least I read someplace in the last 48 hours, that they are going to be providing it in single dose vials. Funny enough, I was reading somewhere recently that last year people found it at Costco. I don't know whether that's going to be true this year or not, but I would look around. Usually Novavax, the companies do provide a link. If you go to Novavax, their website, they usually provide a link as to where you can find it. And I do believe it'll be a few days before it becomes more available. Again, just because the FDA just approved it under emergency use authorization the last couple of days, but it does take some time for it to get distributed across the country. And it usually, again, they go normally to the chain pharmacies first, because that's then more easily available to people in the public who may need it, want it first, who are at high risk and the like. So I would hunt for it, and good for you that you're looking for it. So thank you, because we know COVID is still a very serious infection, despite the fact that, you know, we've gotten so much more used to it in some ways as well.
We'll go to Maggie, who's calling from York. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My dad's 95 and I'm 69. And we've been very vaccinated, and he's in Massachusetts. One of the things, and plus we wear masks everywhere we go. You know, there's this outbreak this summer, and I imagine it's going to get worse when people go inside. But anyway, that's not the question. The question is, he can get a vaccine very easily by just walking into a pharmacy. I made an appointment, and it was canceled 3 times by my local pharmacy. Ended up driving to Massachusetts to get my COVID last fall. Are these now available to physicians? Because my physician, my primary care person, could always give me a flu shot or whatever, and instead of going through this thing online with these pharmacies that just kick you out. It's so hard.
Yeah, anybody have any thoughts, Dora?
Yes, and so, you know, as I've mentioned, that the chain pharmacies, the federal government makes sure that they receive them first, because that is a way to distribute it within 5 miles of something like 95% of the population around the country. So that tends to be more easily available to a lot of people. But yes, they are distributing it as we speak to provider offices. I know a number of provider offices at Maine Health are planning on vaccine clinics, especially in the evenings, to accommodate people who are working. And I think I know Northern Light Health and Central Maine Healthcare, Maine General, and others, all the hospitals around the state and practices do the same, generally do the same thing. But they wait until they get the vaccine in hand before they can schedule those clinics, so that, you know, they're not having to cancel a clinic at the last minute. And I believe that those clinics will start out, but probably in about a couple of weeks is my best guess, or at least what I'm hearing.
Maggie, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Jarvis, I'm going to read a couple related emails here. First one from C. Are doctors testing for mosquito-borne diseases when a patient mentions symptoms? I just had an odd couple of days with nausea, chills, dizzy, stiff joints, and last night I woke up at midnight with a pounding headache, and it felt like my upper spine and the back of my head were in a vice grip. I was outside at dusk doing farm chores a couple of evenings this past week and should have put repellent on. And then Andy sends an email. I'm wondering what some of the symptoms are to be aware of from the various mosquito-borne diseases. So did C describe indeed what some of these symptoms are?
Yeah, unfortunately, all the diseases that we've talked about today have very similar symptoms. When we talk about mosquito-borne illnesses, though, typically the thing that makes it triggers a physician to want to go ahead and do testing is that the patient will have some kind of neurologic problem, as well as the high fever, the runny nose, the cough, kind of things that we talk about with COVID and influenza and RSV. This is what makes it very difficult for us to determine exactly what's going on there. And so with that, what we have put out a call to all physicians and providers across the state of Maine. In fact, the federal CDC has put this kind of alert out to all physicians across the country, is that if you have a patient who tests negative for routine things like influenza, COVID, RSV, and maybe a few other respiratory viruses, and is still getting sick and particularly has neurologic things, there are tests that can be done to test for these mosquito-borne illnesses. They're not readily available. They're not something that the office would do like they can do for COVID and influenza. They often have to be sent to a special lab to get them back, but they can be done. And again, if you yourself feel like you're not getting better and your provider or your physician is not listening to you, bring it up and say, hey, listen, I was in a situation like you just heard described. I was out working on my farm. I didn't put my repellent on. I think I got bit by a mosquito, because that may trigger them to consider testing for it. Unfortunately, for many of these illnesses, there is not a readily available treatment like we have for COVID and influenza, but there are things and precautions that we would take in the case of that. And certainly we would make sure that if a patient was seriously ill, that we treated them appropriately.
Yeah, and Dr. Jarvis, I'm guessing reading C's symptoms, it's not the nausea and chills that you would be concerned about, but saying that C felt like there was felt like my upper spine and back of my head in a vice grip. Would you describe that as a neurologic symptom?
It could be, and it's just something that, again, you know, a provider, particularly a physician, would probably want to take a look at to make sure there's nothing more serious going on. Again, unfortunately, all of these diseases have very similar symptoms and can often look very much alike. It just makes it more of a difficult problem for us to try to determine exactly what somebody has. Thankfully, again, we usually can rule in or rule out RSV, influenza, and COVID pretty quickly because we have rapid tests for those. And then we have to think about the more rare things. And that's a key thing to remember, too, is that these mosquito-borne illnesses are rare, but they can be extremely serious when people get them.
And Dr. Mills, Dora, we have been talking about mosquito-borne illnesses, again, still very rare. But what is not rare, unfortunately, are tick-borne diseases like Lyme and plasmosis and others.
Yes, and the symptoms can overlap with some of the mosquito-borne illnesses too. And you know what I think a lot of them have in common is that you have kind of like flu-like symptoms, as Jim mentioned, but without generally the respiratory symptoms. So you don't have the runny nose and cough and that and the like, but generally a fever, headache, lots of aches, body aches, lack of appetite, sometimes some nausea and vomiting. So and then with Lyme disease, you can get that, you know, the typical rash but you don't always get the rash. So anytime when it's summer and or fall and it's, you know, particularly when it's outside of the flu season, and you get these kinds of symptoms, it's something to think about, you know, getting tested. And particularly as Jim mentioned, you know, unfortunately we don't have treatments for the mosquito-borne diseases, for the ones that we typically see in Maine, like West Nile virus. But we do have treatments, obviously, for Lyme disease. So if that's a possibility, then another reason to get tested. But the good news is the prevention strategies are the same, or similar, you know. So the standing water doesn't really hold for ticks, but getting rid of standing water in your yard holds for mosquitoes, not for ticks. But keeping your yard clean does help with getting rid of ticks around your yard. But then having using the DEET or other insect repellents routinely, because again, I have them around. My kids make fun of me because every time they turn around, there's like a bottle of DEET. It has 40% DEET or picaritin, which is another good one. And also, We also have to remember travelers are at high risk. So right now, we're talking about, mosquito-borne and tick-borne diseases in Maine, but we're seeing a lot more people who travel and coming back with some diseases. So different ones, particularly dengue, malaria, and some evolving ones, some newer ones. But dengue particularly, we're seeing in the southern part of the U.S., southeast and Puerto Rico and Central America and South America. My son just went to Honduras and I treated all of his clothes with permethrin. Which is something you can spray the clothes with. Send them down there with a mosquito net. So he's having a great time and outside and enjoying things, but you do have to take precautions. And he's got DEET as well, because we're seeing a lot of dengue and some in southern parts of the U.S. and Central and South America, lots of it actually. And we're seeing a lot of travelers coming back with it.
And Lara on Facebook is agreeing with what you're talking about the tick-borne diseases. She writes, those symptoms just described sound just like what I had last week, anaplasmosis, tick-borne. So many questions coming in. If you want to try to squeeze in, 1-800-399-3566 or talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're talking about public health issues and medical questions. You can join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, or talk@mainepublic.org. We'll try to get through as many of your questions as we can in this last part of the program. Wynn on Facebook writes, I had my COVID and flu vaccines a couple of days ago at Walgreens. Would the COVID vaccine have been for the new variant? If not, should I get it when it comes in? I'm an old fella with lung issues. Dr. Jarvis.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, it should be the new one. They should have taken all the old ones off the shelf actually a little bit ago. So if it was available there, it should have been the updated one because that's the one that's approved currently now by the FDA.
All right. To David on Facebook, another travel question. I'll send this to you, Dora. David writes, we will be traveling in October on a river cruise in Europe. My husband is immunocompromised. Are we able to get a prescription of Paxlovid to take with us just to be on the safe side? I would worry if he got COVID that we wouldn't be able to find a Paxlovid prescription within the 5-day window.
Very excellent question. And I would make sure he talks to his provider and ask about that. It was not possible to do that. I think it was about a year ago or so. It is doable now from a technical standpoint, it because of the way that it was under emergency use authorization and the like a year or so ago, up until about a few months ago, you couldn't do that without the prescriber, possibly getting into trouble. So, but that now is gone away. So they're also not encouraging people to, stockpile it. But
right.
If you're high risk and you're traveling, and something to talk to your provider about it. And Jim, I don't know how at Northern Light Health they're handling that. I know some providers who are comfortable doing that, and I know some who aren't, and it kind of varies. But
yeah, I think I'd find the same thing. Paxlovid is available certainly in Europe, but you're right. The getting it in the 5-day period might be difficult, and so I agree. I would talk to my provider first.
All right, we'll go to Vinny, who's calling from Brownfield. Hi, Vinny. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, many people have their old test kits left in their medicine cabinets, and they're issuing new test kits. The only thing that probably expires in the old test kit is the liquid medium. Is it possible that they could just issue the liquid medium and not a whole test kit?
Ah, Dr. Jarvis.
Possible, but just not probable. Just simply because of the way manufacturing works, it's just easier to package the whole thing together, and it would be confusing for some individuals who have some healthcare literacy issues, and so it's probably just best that they continue to do that. I will say that here in Maine, it's probably most of those things will not really expire. The thing that usually damages DNA type or RNA type testing, but and this is an RNA type testing, is heat. And because we don't really have that kind of heat here that you start seeing in the southern part of the country, that probably most of them are good. There are some federal websites you can go to and you can Google those that can actually, you can put in the actual code for the test that you have, and it'll tell you, though, even if it has the expiration date on it, whether or not it's still good. Most of the ones that people have bought in the last year or two are going to be good for a while, because those are now under stronger regulation than what we had when we were mass producing them during the height of the pandemic.
That's great information. So I'll be personal here. I stuck mine in a closet in the guest room. So that closet in the guest room, Dr. Jarvis, is probably cool enough to have protected them.
And I should just mention, too, that if you do use an expired test kit and the test result is positive, then it's positive. So, you know, that's the good news. It's just if it's test negative, you're not sure, you're not 100% sure that you're actually negative, or not nearly 100% sure that you're negative. But if you do test positive with an expired test kit, then you can assure that you're most likely have COVID. So.
All right. Thanks for that.
My kids reminded me of that not too long ago when I tested positive. I said, oh, but it was only weekly positive. And they said, you continue to tell people on television and the radio, weekly positive is positive. You're positive. And
so, no matter how
my symptoms were minimal, and I did very, very well. No one else got it from me.
I love the honesty. That's great. Thank you, Vinny, for the question. Email here from Susan. Sometimes staggering vaccines is not recommended. Please comment. Dr. Mills.
Staggering COVID and flu vaccines, or
I'm guessing that's what it was, an email. So I'm guessing that's what. Why don't I rephrase that? And how do we think about this if you're doing COVID and flu vaccine? I've heard you all say get them at the same time. Is there a disadvantage to staggering them if you're not comfortable getting them at the same time?
It's an individual choice, really. So, you know, if you're gonna have a hard time finding, you know, going again for a second visit to get a vaccine in October or so, then get them both. You know, as Jim and I often say, the best vaccine is the one closest to your arm. So if you're, you know, busy person and you just took time out of your busy schedule to get a COVID vaccine, get the flu vaccine at the same time. I do stagger mine, and the reason why is and not that I don't want to get them at the same time. It's just that the fact that the COVID right now, we do have an increase in COVID. We're continuing to see an increase in COVID. I'm in a lot of indoor crowded meetings where I prefer not to have to wear a mask a lot. So I wanted to get the protection sooner than later. And I know I can get a flu vaccine in October. I often wait until I know that there's a bit of flu around. We don't have any flu to any degree right now. So I kind of keep my ear to the ground to see when we're starting to see flu, and then I run out and get a flu vaccine. And also we know that the flu vaccine, like with COVID vaccine, it lasts about 6 months. And so I know if I get it in early September that, you know, we sometimes have flu seasons that go through April and even into May. So I figured the later I get it, a little bit better protection if we have a late season. But again, you know, it's not like the immunity just kind of switches off. So it doesn't go from, you know, something to nothing. So you still have some protection even, you know, after it wanes. So again, if you're high risk and you want to, you know, get it a little bit later, there's some reasons there to do it. But also if you think, okay, I'm going to go for it now, that's great too. So it depends on your individual personal preferences.
We'll go to an email here from Margaret, and I'll send this to you, Jim. Will people who are older than 65 and or are immunosuppressed be eligible for the second dose of the vaccine? And if so, how long after the first dose?
I guess are we talking about COVID again here, or?
I think so. Yeah.
I think so. Again, an email.
Yeah, so it really just depends it just depends what your particular status is and where you are in having had vaccines before. Currently, the recommendation for most individuals is it's you just get the what's now somewhat becoming an annual COVID vaccine. But for those who are older or are immunocompromised, we recommended that they get one at the 6 month mark. So you're getting it every 6 months instead of every year. We don't know what's going to happen with this particular vaccine and what the recommendations are going to be. It really is going to have to do with how big of a surge we see over the wintertime, whether or not there's a recommendation to get a second one. Now, if you haven't had any of the mRNA vaccines before, then of course, then the recommendation is probably going to be for most individuals to get a follow-up shot as a second one. But if you've had them before, you probably are just going to need to get one this time around.
All right. An email here from Andrew. He writes, can you discuss the relative risk of mosquito-borne disease and the potential for toxicity of DEET and other repellents? So, Dr. Mills, you said you keep a repellent everywhere and you use DEET. How do you think about that? I mean, obviously, you're spraying a chemical potentially on your skin and maybe even ingesting the scent.
Yeah, I mean, I do use it judiciously. I mean, just because I have the spray bottles of it everywhere, and I use the pump spray, so it doesn't tend to go, you know, all over the place in people's faces and the like. But I do use it judiciously. And then when I head out, if I'm going to go for a hike in the woods, I will put it on my ankles, particularly in the back of my neck. And, you know, and I wear long pants. I have some great kind of hiking leggings. I don't know what else to call them, but I got from Bean several years ago that are lightweight, but are, you know, protective. And so I tend to cover up when I'm going, particularly hiking in the woods. But if I'm hiking in the woods on a, like on a camp road, I don't put much on unless it's dusk or dawn. And I, you know, then I'll put some DEET or insect repellent on because of mosquitoes. But it's, you know, so I am judicious about it. So I don't want to make it sound like I just spray myself from, you know, head to toe or anything like that. I don't do that. But I do use it judiciously in the places that are high, you know, high risk for getting mosquito bites or ticks, which tends to be around, you know, the legs, ankles, and in the back of my neck and anywhere around my arms if I have anything exposed there.
And what do we know about the toxicity of DEET?
It's, you know, when used appropriately, it's, you know, very safe. I wouldn't use it in very young children. There is a little bit that can get absorbed. And so when my kids were young, I didn't use it on them. I covered them up instead of using an insect repellent. There are also alternatives. So there's oil of lemon eucalyptus, and there's other and picaridin. There's other alternatives that are sometimes can be less toxic if people have an issue with DEET, and they can be very good. They tend not, like the eucalyptus oil doesn't tend to last as long as DEET does, and the picaridin is actually quite good. And I'm not sure I'm quite pronouncing it right. It's P-I-C-A-R. IDIN, something like that. And that's an excellent insect repellent as well. But they do have some neurotoxicities. I mean, they repel insects. So they're not, if you overdose, they can cause, you know, neurotoxicities. But again, it's like anything else, you have to weigh the risks versus the benefits. And, you know, I've lived in other parts of the world, like in East Africa, where we just routinely, I mean, you just get used to avoiding mosquito bites, enjoying the outside, but taking these precautions all the time. And that's increasingly, I think, with climate change and these diseases spreading, we're just having to get used to doing that in Maine as well. Again, you know, enjoy the outdoors, but taking simple precautions to reduce your risk. The risk isn't going to go down to zero, but reduce the risk of getting bitten by mosquitoes. Yeah, I just think about when I was a kid, by August, my legs were scarred from so many mosquito bites. We were just so used to getting bitten by mosquitoes and didn't think anything about it. And we just have to get away from that mentality.
Right.
You know, we have to make sure we, you know, take simple precautions.
Caden on Facebook asks, are there any new COVID vaccines that do not contain polyethylene glycol? Dr. Jarvis.
That is a good question that I'm not sure. The Novavax vaccine most likely does not. And to be clear, there are only going to be three marketed COVID vaccines in the United States this year, the Moderna and the Pfizer messenger RNA vaccines, which do contain a glycolated molecule in order to protect the vaccine component. And then Novavax, which is a more traditional type vaccine. It looks like Dora has been able to Google while I'm talking. We have a very good method here of stalling.
So I did Google, and it does say that Novavax does not have PEG or PEG or polyethylene glycol. So Good.
Great. Jean from Castine, go ahead. If you could be quick, that'd be great.
Oh, very quick. A couple of years ago, I was in Antigua and contracted chikungunya. Does anybody know anything about it? And is it something that's documented in the United States?
It's mostly with travelers. I'm sorry you did contract it. It's particularly severe with fetuses. So with unborn children, if pregnant women contract it, it can cause devastating neurodeficits in the children who were born. So Brazil, for instance, had it in Central America and other places there had huge outbreaks several years ago. And they had a very lot, I mean, thousands and thousands of children who were born with devastating. But it's the good news, we haven't seen it here except for in travelers.
Great.
So again, a reason to avoid mosquitoes and when you're traveling.
Great. And we're almost out of time, so I'm going to not go to Emma in Bucksport, but ask her question of you, Dr. Jarvis. What is the latest on the Lyme disease vaccine? We know it was in clinical trials. How soon might that be available to the general public?
Yeah, so they are still in clinical trials, and both Maine Health and Northern Light Health are involved in those in those clinical trials right now. It'll be a little while, because what they're trying to do is, this is a vaccine that you're actually going to have to get seasonally. That's at least what they think it is. It's going to happen. And so it's taking a number of years for them to have enough people to go through to determine how long and in between an effectiveness based on season, because Lyme disease tends to be seasonal, obviously, in our spring and summer months.
All right. Well, that is going to be our last question. Thank you both so much for joining us for this hour. Dr. James Jarvis, physician leader and director of clinical education for Northern Light Health, and Dr. Dora Mills, chief health improvement officer for Maine Health. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can share your thoughts anytime with Maine Calling by using the Maine Public Vox Pop app. Download it, and you can easily record your comments. And if you'd like to sign up for our free weekly newsletter, that's easy too, mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.